Good afternoon, this is Susan. I'll be reading the pantograph today for Friday, April 21st, 2017. And let's begin this reading with this headline. Bloomington woman shoots burglar in garage. A Bloomington woman shot a burglar in her garage early Friday morning. Bloomington police said they responded to a call of a burglary in progress in the 700 block of South Clayton Street at 1:32 a.m. A preliminary investigation found a woman was home when the alarm was activated from inside the garage. The woman then went to the garage armed with a handgun, where she encountered a male intruder, police said. The physical altercation ensued, initiated by the man, and the resident shot the intruder. The man fled the scene prior to police arriving. A short time later, the officers were dispatched to the 900 block of South Clayton Street for a report of a man who had been shot. The man was identified as the suspect from the burglary and was taken to a local hospital for non-life-threatening injuries, police said. Michael B. Davis, age 21, of Bloomington, was charged later Friday morning with one count of burglary and one count of battery. He is expected to appear at a bond hearing Friday afternoon. He's being held at the McLean County Jail. Anyone with information about this case is asked to contact the detective Moreland at 309-434-2359. Or smoreland at citybloomington.org, that's CITYBLM.org, or Detective Atterbury at 309-434-2548, or email jatterbury at citybloom.org. And let's move now to this. High school brings many firsts. Getting that coveted driver's license, the first formal dance, the first college acceptance letter. Seeing those firsts and many more have been Dave Bowman's favorite part of serving as principal at Normal Community High School. But this year will be his last after 33 years working at McLean County Unit 5. His last day before retirement is June 9th. He's being succeeded July 1st by Trevor Chapman, principal at Evans Junior High School. "I really enjoyed watching kids grow," said Bowman. "In middle school, you watch them try to figure out who they are and what they're passionate about. In high school, there are a lot of life-changing moments, and it's fun to be a part of that." Bowman has served as NCHS principal for 5 years. Before that, he worked as principal, associate principal, coach, and teacher at Chittix and Parkside Junior High Schools and NCHS. Bowman said he's grateful for the opportunity to be a part of administrative and educational changes in the district. "The stress of financial struggles at the state level and a spike in enrollment has taken a toll on NCHS, but Bowman said he's amazed by the staff every day. At this point, we're out of space in the building, but it's amazing to watch teachers cope and adapt. They continue to find ways to do excellent things despite financial challenges," he said. He also voiced appreciation for the local organizations like State Farm, Project Oz, and the United Way of McLean County that have helped the schools with finances, resources, and educational programs. "We couldn't do the things we do without supportive community groups," said Bowman. Nikki Maurer, associate principal at NCHS, described working alongside Bowman in the past 5 years as a fantastic experience. "He made a significant difference in the overall culture of our building and the strength of our school community. We have an immense sense of pride in our school, and it's a very positive environment for students and everyone who works here," she said. Maurer added she's excited for the opportunity to work with Chapman, saying, "I hope to continue the rich culture that already exists at NCHS. I appreciate the opportunity to continue what Dave has helped build at the high school during his time there." Tom Eder, former Normal West High School principal and head basketball coach at NCHS, worked closely with Bowman until Eder retired in 2013. Dave always did an excellent job with young people as a coach and a teacher. He's a student-first educator, said Eder. He has a great sense of humor, and kids are comfortable opening up to him. He will be remembered for always being there for teachers and children during difficult moments, added Eder. Certainly the most difficult time of Bowman's career occurred at NCHS in September 2012, when a freshman boy fired a gun in a crowded classroom. No one was injured, and the student was subdued by a teacher and other students. The school followed emergency protocol and evacuated to nearby Eastview Christian Church. You can't go through an experience like that without it sticking with you, said Bowman. It's amazing how our students and staff pulled together to support each other. Eastview Christian Church was astronomically helpful that day, and they have been a wonderful neighbor. I was amazed by the outpouring of love and support from the community and other schools. It was further evidence to me that Bloomington Normal is a wonderful place to live and raise a family. Bowman of Bloomington plans to spend more time with his wife, Brooke, his children, and grandchildren. He will also teach education classes at Illinois State University. I've never experienced such joy and sorrow at the same time. I love what I do, and I love this school and district and the number of relationships I have established. I'll still be here in the community, but it will be different, no question. Well wishes from students and associates can be sent to the Bowmans, and that's THEBOLLMANNS, at hotmail.com. And let's move now to some more news. And that headline is, experts say ex-offenders need help returning to society. This is a part of a series of stories the Pantograph will be publishing on challenges facing people after their release from prison, including issues in housing and employment and reentry efforts at the state and federal levels. Individuals returning to the community from prison have about a 50% chance of success as they navigate a system with few options for housing, employment, and support, according to speakers at Thursday's Central Illinois Offender Reentry Symposium. Some of the strongest calls for more services for former offenders were offered by speakers who have worked in the criminal justice system. Keynote speaker Roger Heaton, who serves as the state's director of public safety and is a Homeland Security advisor to the governor, admitted he spent little time during his 18 years as a federal prosecutor reflecting on what happens to the guy once he's finished his sentence. Former McLean County Sheriff Mike Emery, who now serves as law enforcement coordinator for the U.S. Attorney for the Central District of Illinois, told the audience at Illinois State University's Bone Student Center that he spent his first 25 years with the county enforcing the law before he was elected sheriff in 2006 and inherited an overcrowded, inefficient jail. Retired Chief Judge Elizabeth Robb spent more than two decades on the bench in the 11th Judicial Circuit on cases that sometimes ended with a prison sentence. Heaton noted that about 30,000 of the state's 48,000 inmates will return to their communities annually. The failure of about half of those inmates to stay out of prison costs taxpayers about $40 million each year, said Heaton. Drawing on his work with the Illinois State Commission on Criminal Justice and Sentencing Reform, Heaton said extensive change is needed to a system that offers little to those leaving prison. Increased access to mental health and substance services is critical, said Heaton. Otherwise, we'll make our own contribution to the revolving door. One of the committee's recommendations is a review of the restrictions on 40-plus professional licenses available to felons in Illinois. Heaton pointed to the irony that the Department of Corrections offers job training for barbers and manicurists, two professions that were barred to felons. Emery shared his experience with helping to form the McLean County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, as an example of the positive results that can be realized when all the players in the justice system come together. Initially formed to address jail overcrowding that cost the county over $700,000 in 2008, the CJCC spearheaded changes that essentially eliminated by 2012 the cost of housing inmates elsewhere. We adopted the belief that people should be in jail because we're afraid of them and not because we're mad at them, said Emery. Rob, who also served on the State Reform Commission, recalled her feelings when sentencing a person to prison. In my mind, that was a sentence to be warehoused, said Rob. With few resources available, there's not much hope when you're released, said the retired judge. Rob said she is encouraged by the governor's directive to the Reform Commission to develop a plan to reduce the state's prison population by 25% by 2015. The tough challenge of housing is being addressed by two agencies represented at the seminar. Kelly Kleiman, project manager with Botec Analysis, is looking for apartments for 30 state inmates in Peoria and 30 in Rockford. The inmates will be moved to the Hill and East Moline Correctional Centers for 90 days, where they will prepare for their transfer to apartments and a program designed to help them develop living skills and find employment before their release. Jim Simpkins, Residential Reentry Director with Human Service Center, assists the federal inmates integrating back into the community. The Peoria Center is one of four in Illinois to provide housing for up to 6 months. The event was organized by ISU Associate Professor Jeff Walsh and sponsored by ISU's Department of Criminal Justice Sciences and Criminal Justice Association. And we'll move now to this headline, Band Plays On. Sponsors keep music program alive at Prairie Central. Dateline Fairbury. When state budget cuts nearly wiped out the music department at Prairie Central Schools, the community stepped up and refused to let the programs fade. Lisa Klein, band director at Prairie Central High School in Fairbury, said a few years ago there wasn't enough money coming from the state to fund the music department. She told students some of their favorite programs might have to be cut. Without funding, the music department would be bare bones. We would only be able to play concerts, and there would be no marching or jazz band, said Klein. After students begged to keep the programs afloat, Klein worked with the band booster group to create a sponsorship program. Letters were sent to businesses and community members in the Fairbury area asking for contributions. We started receiving donations anywhere from $20 to $2,000, said Klein. Now the band receives an average of $20,000 from the community each year. 44 sponsors have contributed about $21,000 for programs next year. That money allows us to purchase new instruments, concert attire, and marching band music and drills, said Klein. Freshman Audrey Whitlock plays clarinet in the band and said she can't believe how much the community has donated. The band is a way for students to be involved in something besides schoolwork. It's something a lot of students are passionate about. It means so much to us, she said. Junior Seth Travis plays on the marching band drumline. He said after home football games, spectators will thank and congratulate the musicians for an impressive halftime show. It's really nice to have their support, he said. Senior Lexi Glowacki also is a percussionist and said the music program is something that must remain. It gives us all something to look forward to. It's incredible to know our hard work does pay off and the community enjoys seeing us do what we love to do. Some of the area businesses that have donated include Dave's Supermarket in Fairbury, First State Bank of Forest, and Slagle Manufacturing in Forest. The city of Fairbury and dozens of individuals also contributed. Besides the monetary contribution, Slagle Manufacturing has donated labor and materials by building a marching band teacher tower and converting a school bus into a portable storage unit for band uniforms. Mark Slagle owns the company with his brother Don and is also president of the Prairie Central School Board, where he sees the financial struggles firsthand. "I know how desperate we are for funding because of the state. School officials aren't just blowing smoke saying things are hard. They really are. If it weren't for volunteers and fundraisers, there's a chance we would have to cut music and athletic programs," he said. Slagle said he has mixed emotions about the message local funding could send to lawmakers in Springfield. "On one hand, I don't want them to think that because the local community is stepping up, they don't have to. We want the message to show how one of the most important things in the country is our children's education," he said. And we'll move now to the next headline, and that headline is: Suspect denies sex assault of two girls. A Bloomington man accused of molesting two girls denied any inappropriate conduct during his testimony Thursday as the final witness in his trial on predatory criminal sexual assault charges. When asked if he had sexually assaulted the girls during a September 2014 birthday party sleepover, Christian Aranda responded, "Definitely not." The 43-year-old suspect said he returned home from a night out with a friend at a normal bar to find three girls sleeping in the basement of the home he shared with his girlfriend. Aranda claims he stopped to use the bathroom and went to bed without talking to the girls. Aranda said he was shocked 4 months later when he received a call from his girlfriend saying she was at the Bloomington Police Department speaking to a detective about a report that two of the girls had been sexually assaulted. Aranda said police asked for his phone number, wallet, and keys when he arrived to support his girlfriend. Aranda said he was shocked, to say the least. It was surreal. When Detective Michael Burns confronted Aranda with the accusations and the officer's opinion that he believed the girls, Aranda denied statements from his girlfriend that he confessed to molesting the girls during two conversations after his arrest. "I was telling her what the allegations were," said Aranda, adding that he had been advised not to talk about the pending charges. The girlfriend, who is the mother of one of the alleged victims, testified Wednesday that Aranda twice admitted he had laid down with the girls and touched two of them inappropriately. She said she stayed in a relationship with Aranda for about a year after the charges were filed because she believed he was going to plead guilty and attend counseling. Authorities learned of the allegations after one of the girls disclosed it, and her parents notified the mother of the second victim. Both girls, who are now adolescents, testified that Aranda molested them as they slept on mattresses on the floor. Closing arguments are scheduled for this morning. And moving now to more in local crime and courts, with this headline: Public safety, burglary conviction, impersonation charge. A Bloomington man has been convicted of residential burglary in connection with a series of break-ins at a Bloomington apartment complex. Andre Alexander, age 31, is eligible for up to 30 years in prison when he is sentenced for his role in a string of October 2015 break-ins at the Ponds on the city's east side. State's Attorney Jason Chambers praised Bloomington police officers who had to make several snap decisions that prevented serious injuries after police responded to a resident's call of suspicious activity. Co-defendant Keith McAllister, age 29, is serving 6 years, and a third defendant, Mario Crowder, also 29, is serving 18 years for residential burglary related to the incident. In another headline, impersonation of a judge. A Bloomington man is charged with theft of more than $10,000, wire fraud, and impersonating a judge. William Sales, age 52, of the 900 block of South Main Street, is accused of taking the money from another man, transmitting the funds by wire. Charges say the suspect claimed he was a judge. The offenses occurred between September 1, 2015 and March 3, 2017, according to charges. Sales was jailed in lieu of posting $10,035. gunfire. Bloomington police were called shortly before 4 p.m. to reports of several shots being fired in the area of Catherine and Monroe Streets. There were no reports of injuries, and no one was in custody Thursday evening. Police continue to investigate. And let's move now to some entertainment news with this headline. Let's move to the Daily Digest with this. Holocaust Remembrance Service set. Moses Montefiore Congregation is hosting a Holocaust Remembrance Service at 7 p.m. Sunday at the Temple, 102 Robin Hood Lane in Bloomington, for Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day. Myra Gordon will speak in memory of her aunt, Helen Rodenberg Goldberger. The service will include a candle lighting service. Love Thy Neighbor concert set. Habitat for Humanity of McLean County will have its annual Love Thy Neighbor choir concert, directed by Mike Claver, from 3 to 4:30 p.m. on Sunday at Wesley United Methodist Church, 502 East Front Street in Bloomington. The concert, which helps to provide sponsorships for a home build each year, will feature the Habitat Community Choir and songs performed by the Sounds of Illinois Barbershop Chorus and the Children's Choir from Trinity Lutheran Church, joined by other children and Habitat families. Admission is free, but attendees are welcome to make a donation. And now for this. Actress and activist urges community involvement. To Patricia Arquette, an Academy Award and Emmy Award-winning actress, becoming an activist is akin to walking into the sunshine. What's the value of coming out of your room when you're standing in darkness? Arquette asked. It's waking up, reaching out, and understanding humanity more. Staying indoors all day is not very expansive or illuminating or enriching or surprising or wonderful, she said. Arquette spoke with the Pantograph before her talk Thursday night at Illinois State University's Bone Student Center, where she was the keynote speaker for ISU's Science and Technology Week. Arquette was chosen because of her passion for Give Love, her skills training organization engaged in community-led sanitation projects to treat and compost waste, improve public health, and create jobs around recycling, said Kara Snyder, an assistant dean at ISU's College of Applied Science and Technology. Arquette raised the issue of equality and fair wages for women when she accepted the 2015 Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for her performance in Boyhood. While that gave support to the issue and raised her stature as an activist, she told the Pantograph, "I grew up in a family of activists." Activism means being a part of your community and trying to bring about change where you want to see, said Arquette, who is from Evanston. Arquette, who is 49 years old, won an Emmy Award for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama for Medium, and she believes acting and activism are complementary. To be a good actor, you need to be connected to human beings, she said. When I came to a position of public value, I wanted to use it to shine a light on things that were not being addressed, she said. Her volunteer work in Haiti in 2012 led her to learn that in 35 years, water will be scarce for one-third of the world's population unless changes are made. Give Love is working on programs such as household compost toilets in water-scarce areas in several developing countries. In the developing world, 2.5 billion people don't have access to a clean toilet, and more than 90% of fecal sludge from latrines is untreated and disposed of improperly, contaminating water and leading to disease and premature death, according to Give Love. Regarding pay equity, Arquette noted that many mothers are the primary breadwinners in their family, yet they're living in poverty. Men should care about this issue, because it's the right thing to do, she said, advising young women and men to learn how to negotiate their salaries and encouraging passage of the Equal Rights Amendment in Illinois. Balancing a career, parenthood, and activism is difficult, but I would not be a happy person if I wasn't doing these things. You realize that the people you are trying to help are helping you to understand and enjoy life. She urged people to find projects by following their passions, doing their homework, not all aid projects are equal, and determining where they can have an impact. And we'll move now to this headline, Heartland Offers Fast Path to Business Degree. Heartland Community College will begin a new program this fall that will allow students who are at least 25 years old to quickly learn an associate's degree in business while attending classes 2 evenings a week and online. FastPath is designed for post-traditional students who will take a combination of in-person and online classes part-time to complete the degree in 2 years. 22 students will be selected for the first group or cohort. They will take classes as a group moving through the curriculum. Lindsay Eichhorst, Heartland's Director of Enrollment Services, said the cohort approach works well because they can build a learning community that they can bounce ideas off of and get support from. Eichhorst will serve as the advisor for all students in the program to provide consistency. I'll stay with them throughout the program. We can build that relationship. Classes will meet from 6 to 8:30 p.m. 2 nights a week. There will be 8-week sessions with each student in the program taking the same classes with few exceptions. Rick Pierce, Vice President for Learning and Student Success, said the college has been working on the idea for more than a year. We reached out to some of the major employers around here to see if a program would meet their needs and whether their employees would be eligible for tuition reimbursement, said Pierce. He declined to say which employers were contacted, but said the college received a positive response. Lincoln College has a similar model, leading to a bachelor's degree. Western Illinois University has a program that is completely online. Community colleges with similar programs include Rock Valley College, Harper College, and the City Colleges of Chicago, according to Pierce. Although the format is different, FastPath is essentially a transfer program. Its graduates will be able to transfer to other schools to complete a bachelor degree. Pierce said Heartland has worked with Illinois State University, the most likely institution which students would transfer, to ensure its curriculum aligns with ISU for a smooth transition. The program is aimed at older students because if you're going to take a program like this, you have to bring some life experience into it, said Pierce. It's not for the traditional student who wants to hurry up. The name for the program came from Kelly Hill, Vice President of Continuing Education and Advancement. Hill noted that Heartland promoted a guided path to success, and this was just a faster path, so the name FastPath was chosen. Prospective students must be at least 25 years old, have a high school diploma or GED diploma, and meet required placement levels at literacy and math. More information is available at heartland.edu/fastpath. Let's take a short break now and return with the second half of the Pantograph for Friday, April 21st, 2017. Please stay tuned.